Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Shankachuta gets it. Canto 10, chapter 34, text 31. So Shankachuta came in the midst of a holy festival where Krishna and Balaram together were performing pastimes with gopis, each having their separate sets of gopis, singing and so forth, and at in traditional ways. And Shankachuta came along and decided that these young girls were meant for him to be the enjoyer of. And he, with a big stick, he chased them away to heading in a northerly direction. The gopis, being very fearful, called out to Krishna. Krishna, please protect us. Krishna and Balaram, the controllers of everything, including Shankachuta, became very angry and called out to the gopis, don't worry, do not fear. And then Krishna charged off to catch Shankachuta. He picked up a log, a salji log, and Shankachuta saw Krishna coming, and he saw both of them as time and death, and he left the girls and ran for his life. So text 31, the mighty Lord overtook Shankachuta from a great distance as if from nearby, my dear king. And then with his fist, the Lord removed the wicked demon's head together with his crest jewel. We heard that he had a jewel on his head, on his turban. And it was in the shape of a conch, and there's different ideas of where it came from. He either stole it or was a gift from Kuvera or something. But it was his mark of distinction or something. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, there's no BBT commentary. Vishwanath writes, though he appeared far away, suddenly Krishna appeared close to Shankachuta and with his fist decapitated the demon. In order to prevent each gopi from thinking that she alone should be given the jewel and prevent the rise of envy, Krishna gave the jewel to Balaram. However, later Balaram gave the jewel to Radha. Jiva Goswami writes, though Krishna was far away, he caught up with the demon as if he were close. It was not proper to kill him from the back as he was quickly running away, but he could kill the thief while he was fleeing if it was not from the back. He killed him with his fist, not with a shala tree or any other means, with only one fist. This means that he did it without effort, since he was the Lord, Vibhu. He took off his head and the jewel at once. Sanatan Goswami writes, though far away Krishna appeared near and faced him, it was improper to kill a fleeing person from behind. He appeared on all sides. since it was improper to kill him from behind. He was wicked because he had taken the women. He removed the head along with the jewel with one fist only. It did not take effort since he was the Lord, Vibhu. Anga is an address expressing joy. Text 32. Having thus killed the demon Shankarachuda and taken away his shining jewel, Lord Krishna gave it to his elder brother with great satisfaction as the gopis watched. And here's a short purport. Various gopis perhaps thought that Govinda would give one of them the valuable jewel. To prevent rivalry among them, Sri Krishna happily gave the jewel to his older brother Balaram. Solve that problem. Jiva Goswami writes, he killed him completely. Ni hatya. This means that Krishna destroyed the subtle body as well as his gross body. How do you do that? Well, if you're Krishna, you can do that. So where did he go? No subtle body. Liberation. Doesn't say specifically. All the gopis looked with disinterest, since they all thought that they would be the fortunate one to get the jewel, but he gave it to Balaram, so that the gopis would not become envious of each other if one of them had it. And out of respect for Balaram, and because he had protected the gopis. So three reasons. And most of all, he gave it to him to please Balaram. So respect for Balaram and to please Balaram. Because that was one of the things that was going on during the singing. Krishna and Balaram were singing together, but it was for the pleasure of Balaram specifically mentioned, because Ananta, being the Lord of that portion of Vedic teaching, the science of music, it was to please Balaram. So here this is to please Balaram, out of respect for Balaram, in reciprocation for Balaram's having protected the gopis, and to prevent the gopis from getting envious of one another. Of course, he could have kept it himself too. He gave it with pleasure, pritya, since he was pleased that Balaram had protected the gopis. Ultimately, this means he did it because of the gopis. That's important. Sanatan Goswami writes, the jewel had a natural brilliance. He took the jewel to give to one of his beloveds privately. He knew that it was impossible to keep it hidden. Therefore, he gave it to his older brother. The women looked on with affection. They all thought, Sanatana Goswami writes, Krishna loves me. He will give me the jewel. Unquote. With joy, they looked at Krishna, or the jewel. To avoid one receiving it and others being envious, he ignored them and gave it to Balaram, who was respected. Thus, no one could be envious. He desired to give the jewel to Radha, quote, if I give it to her, others will hate me. I have given it to him. Since he is omniscient, he will give it to her, thinking of pleasing me. Then there's no worry of anyone being angry. Thus, he gave the jewel with affection to Balaram. Paragraph. All the gopis saw this with joy and with everyone in agreement. Prashantinam cha yoshitam. If there was no agreement, he could not give it to him. This is the deep intention. There was another reason for bringing Balaram. This was another reason for bringing Balaram. Thus, this act shows his great affection for Balaram. When the gopis were taken away by the demon and were shouting for a moment. He did not rescue them with Balaram, though he saw them in order to show to Balaram the gopis' great attraction for his song, Balaram's song. If he did not do that, this would not be revealed. We're getting all this inside picture of the heart of the contemplations and the motivations of the personality of Godhead. Pretty confidential, huh? Paragraph. Since, and this is the end of the whole section, by the way. This last paragraph is, that's the close to chapter 34. Since Krishna's other activities during this time would cause embarrassment to all, they were not discussed in Braja at this time. Nanda, Yashoda, and others were not told. Or, even though the events were told by the gopis or the two boys on some pretext, everyone was astonished by experiencing his continual greatness, and thus, though they heard, they did not hear them. Thus, Shukadev does not mention about this, since there were no details about these revelations. Interesting paragraph. We had some discussion the other day about Shankachuda being referred to as a demon while he's also being referred to as a devotee or a associate of Kuvera. So Kuvera is a demigod, and sometimes there's followers of demigods that are also devotees of the Lord. And sometimes there are demigods or associates of the demigods that are demons. And, you know, the distinction, Prabhupada would speak on this quite often just from Bhagavad Gita, the distinction is very simple, Sura and Asura, demine and demoniac. It's all centered on their regard for Krishna. The one of the ways that Srila Prabhupada would describe dharma, of course there's the common dharma means the essence of things, and the essence of the living entity is service to God. So that's dharma, is not one's religious system, religion, but service to God. Then, and there's another picture that he would portray about religion, and it's not totally distinct, but there's a significant difference. The definition of religion is codes given by God, and one who is a religious person, who is one who follows the codes given by God. And then he would say, it doesn't matter, this religion, that religion, that's not the essence in any case. The essence is, some have these rituals and those beliefs, and then in other groups, etc. So the essence is following the codes given by God. That's what religion means. And then, the fruit of that religion by following the codes of gods is submission unto. It's preliminary. Submission unto God, because these are codes given by God. And then he would explain, just like the state gives law. That's law. And a good citizen is one who follows the law. And a bad citizen is one who doesn't follow the law. The lawbreaker. And that's the laws of God followed, that's the religious, not followed, that's the the irreligious or the asura, and then, you know, different terminologies for the non-follower person. But then go back to the higher purposes. What's the purpose? So the real test of religion, those who are following the laws given by God, is that they're capturing the essence. This, you know, applies to us. Sadhakas, that's good. Varnashram dharma and sadhaka and contemplation on the topics. Let's say, because there was some discussion about the universal form topic. The persons, when they saw Krishna entering into the wrestling arena of Kamsa, some of them saw him as the universal form. It's not, I mean, what does that mean? It doesn't mean that they saw Virat Rupa walking across the wrestling arena. It doesn't necessarily mean, doesn't necessarily not mean that, but they saw him, Krishna, as he is the basis and support of the whole universe. That's the universal form. In any case, there are different conceptions of God. We find in Nectar Devotion and in Prabhupada's speaking, even Aborigines, there's some sense of something that is God or godly, and it is worship because that's of the soul. Worship of God is innate. Faith is innate. According to the modes of nature and elevation of consciousness, one will have repose that faith somewhere. And according to the mode of ignorance, goodness, ignorance, then passion, then goodness, there repose faith. So a religious person reposes faith in the codes given by God, not worship of a mountain or worship of a something that different people that are using his word, Aborigines, or not highly cultured, not accepting the Varnashram system, put it that way, they're not living by those codes given by God. But those who accept Varnashram and live by those codes, what's the purpose? It's Daivi Varnashram. It's the Lord is to be pleased by executing my duties of life. And that's a bhakti principle. And then the mature stage of that is that love of God becomes awakened. So that's the real test. Again, I'm speaking Prabhupada's words. The real test is that there's love of God. You know, what does love of God mean? It can mean different things to different people according to their consciousness or their evolved state of intelligence. They have different ideas of what love of God is and what it looks like. So the picture just keeps going up and up and up. Even within the Vedas or other traditions outside of the Vedas per se, Shankachuda was a follower of Kuvera, so Yakya or Guyaka or both. But he was a demon. And then there are many others, it's a long list. They were followers of various demigods, perhaps Lord Shiva at the top of the list, but other demigods and so forth. The divine and demoniac, the suras and the asuras. And using Prabhupada's word, sura means devotee, and asura means not accepting the authority of God. Not accepting the authority of God, you follow the codes given by God. So to do what Shankachuda did, and it was said that he had done similar things in the past, this is demoniac behavior. And directly there's Krishna, and he was just ignoring Krishna. So we're hearing he got liberation. This is one of the teachings. In a broad stroke, one of the teachings of what happens when Krishna encounters anyone. And the whether it's killed or something or something, when Krishna encounters anyone, there's elevation. And there's different kinds of elevation according to the position of the person, their regard for Krishna. This long explanation of, for example, when Hiranyakashipu was killed, he didn't see Lord Nrisimhadeva as the personality of Godhead. When he was killed, the reward, the elevation was he achieved great powers and great wealth. And so that was Ravana. Great power and great wealth. And still, you know, of a demoniac disposition. Although he was killed, that wasn't removed. He was liberated from the reactions of his past sins that was told by Lord Nrisimhadeva to Prahlad. But the disposition remained. Similar to, not the same as, but similar to Daksha, when he requested forgiveness from Lord Shiva for his offense to Lord Shiva, he was relieved of the reactions. But the disposition didn't go away. So when he was born again, and as Daksha, same name, he had the same, similar or same disposition. In this case, it was towards Narada. But, you know, pride and defense. It doesn't go away so easily. So here we're hearing specifically, don't know any details, but Jiva Goswami is very clear about it, that he was completely killed means even his subtle body was taken. And that's only possible, well, it's primarily possible through bhakti, and he didn't become a bhakta. And it also, one can, there's some detail, I forget which portion of the later cantos of the Bhagavatam, it does speak of the subtle body being not just suspended, but dissolved for those who attain the position of merging, or sayuja. There's no subtle body if one does achieve that. So it doesn't say specifically that's what happened, but apparently that's what happened because no subtle body. Why are subtle bodies awarded? And conversely, why are subtle bodies removed? Subtle bodies are awarded because it's necessary in order to work the machine of the gross material body, and the gross material body and subtle body are awarded because of a living entity's desire for separate enjoyment. And when that living entity, by good fortune, comes in contact with the Supreme Lord, they're elevated one way or another way, even materially, but ultimately spiritually. So being drawn, here we are practicing sadhakas, and somehow we have some attraction for Krishna and Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam and Prasadam and other transcendental realities. And that's elevating. It's great fortune. We're very fortunate. Krishna doesn't easily award. We hear from nectar devotion, devotional service. Although, on the other hand, we go canvassing, but not everyone says yes. Since even if we say yes, it's still Krishna's hand in extending himself by offering devotional service to others. This is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's position. He didn't require, first surrender to me and then I'll deliver you. Lord Chaitanya just said, I'll deliver you. Please take devotional service. That's a Kali Yuga special delivery. Lord Chaitanya and the associates of Lord Chaitanya. So Srimad Bhagavatam is one of those special delivery packages. We just have to open it and discuss the topics like we're doing, churn the topics in the association of devotees, and that benefit comes to us. Let's see if there's some discussion.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I was just thinking this morning, I mean, we see a lot of Mayavadis taking devotional service by the association of some devotees. But we don't see the other way. Devotees turning to the Mayavadis anywhere in the history. I mean, at least I didn't hear. But we see a lot of times devotees falling down and taking because of sense gratification or because of pride. So, I mean, I was just trying to understand why that happens. I mean, the Mayavadi philosophy itself is very strong. I was hearing the other day, because otherwise Lord Chaitanya, Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya would not have come to defeat that philosophy. The philosophy is strong, but it is not as strong as the Vaishnava philosophy. But I mean, philosophy is one thing, the other one is the sense gratification, the pride. Those things, it looks like they are more powerful.
Interesting thought. On more than one occasion, Prabhupada was asked the question, if two persons are exposed to some illness and one contracts the disease and the other doesn't contract the disease, is that karma? And Prabhupada's answer was that when one is, what's the word he used? When resistance is strong, you don't contract the disease. If your resistance is weak, you can contract the disease. You know, he didn't get into the medical. What is if you're, you know, your immune system or whatever people say these days about resistance being strong. So with that picture, it may be that we're more susceptible. You know, there's less immunity to material attraction, or, you know, that's the hit parade number one. Is so leaving that behind is a stronger pull than impersonal. It doesn't mean that impersonal doesn't also pull, but we're vulnerable more. It doesn't mean that hedonism or the lure of sense enjoyment has greater strength than impersonal teaching. It just means we're more susceptible. That's one way of explaining. Krishna's illusory potency got, you know, how many living entities are there that are under the whammy of Maya? You know, look out the window and there's the trees and there's the grass and there's the brushes and there's the insects and the birds and the this and the that. And, the, you know, it's all completely covered by Maya, the illusory potency. And we're very habituated to it. So we're more susceptible. We're more vulnerable. Doesn't mean that the material conception is stronger than the impersonal conception. But when a devotee becomes weak, it's more common that there's weakening of sensual attraction than drawn to impersonalism. And saying that doesn't mean that those who have sensual weakness are not also having affinity towards impersonalism. Prabhupada's coming to the Western countries, which is filled with impersonalism and voidism. It's just another dimension, aside from sensual weakness.
Guru Maharaj, about this subtle body dissolving, I was thinking about this third canto reference we hear from Kapil Dev's teachings.
Yes.
With bhakti, it can dissolve. And here we are hearing about the other side of it.
Yes.
Just want you to, if you could elaborate a little bit, Maharaj, what's the difference?
I had this discussion with Paramarupa, who's probably listening. And I'll ask Paramarupa to send you the scriptural reference, because it's not in the front of my mind, that says, you know, that this other position, those that are, that enter into the Brahmajyoti, their subtle bodies are also dissolved. So it's not only through bhakti, it's by the mercy of the Lord that, something like that can happen. And now here's a third category. You know, if you're Shankachuda, you know, Krishna can take away your subtle body. So it's the third position.
But those two are not desirable way of...
Yes, they're not desirable. And they're not desirable because no service to Krishna. Hellish. No service to Krishna.
Maharaj, I was thinking about this other thing, Krishna giving the jewel to Lord Balaram so that the gopis won't become envious. We hear there is no envy in the spiritual world. Is it a nice form of envy?
Yeah, there's many. I was not exactly that, but this, our acharyas are saying this, so we can't contradict our acharyas. But attention from the gopis commonly goes to Radha. They're not envious of Radha. They love Radha, and they love Radha Krishna love. So why would they be envious if Krishna gives to Radha? I was, you know, thinking the same. Different, but different perspective. I'm a little puzzled, as are you. Okay. Anything else here?
Rupa Vilas Prabhu from Carbondale. His question is, will... it's the same question about...
Okay, okay.
And Kirti Prabhu's question... Are there any parallels in the pastime of Shankachuda kidnapping the gopis and Ravana kidnapping Sita, also in the deliverance of Shankachuda and Ravana?
Well, Ravana... We don't hear explicitly Shankachuda's wickedness, meaning he was interested, as Ravana was known to violate women, you know, whatever the terminology that's appropriate these days, he would rape them. So we don't know what Shankachuda's plan was or intention was. You know, maybe he's a small Ravana or something like that. We don't know that kind of detail. But wanting to be the enjoyer separate from Krishna, that's something that they share in common for sure. And the destination afterwards, Ravana, we don't hear that Ravana became free from his subtle body. We know that he was freed from the reactions of his so many sinful deeds, that we know. And so perhaps we can say Shankarachuda got more mercy. And Ravana had to take another birth. So some certainly similarities and some differences. That's it. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.